This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hope everybody's having a great day as we welcome you into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Well, I'd say most people are feeling that way unless they are Jets fans. Alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And Michael, a 22-16 win for the New York Jets yesterday. It was a remarkable walk-off finish after the Bills tie things on a Doinkton field goal. The Jets end up getting it done, compliments of Xavier Gibson. But it was an uphill battle after four plays into this game. Their star, their savior, four-time MVP quarterback Aaron Rodgers goes down. He has a torn Achilles. He is done for the season. How does this now impact your view of the Jets moving forward?
Well, it's significant because we give so much. There's no player in the league, if you talk to any handicapper, that carried a point spread with him like Aaron Rodgers. And even though he wasn't the same MVP last year for Green Bay, people still felt like, you know, the Jets were a really good defense and that he was going to be able to give them that quarterback to go along with some of the skill players to get him over the top. And now they lose him. So now they're going to have to play a guy that the team, I'm not sure, believes in. And I'm not sure the guy wants to be the player in Zach Wilson. But they're going to have to try to make it work. They're going to have to win games with defense. They're going to have to try to not turn the ball over. They're going to have to rally around this young player and see if they can get it going. The season's not over. It's really going to rely on Robert Saleh. But there was so much fanfare. There was so much conversation about Aaron Rodgers that, you know, it's hard to pivot. And it's going to require a very quick pivot because Dallas doesn't care. Dallas could care less. The Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Bills, they don't care. It's on to the next game.
Yeah, and you feel terrible for this fan base. Will Hill, who we had earlier on in the first hour, which, by the way, welcome in our new DraftKings audience. If you missed any of hour one of the program, you can download the Lombardi Line in podcast form. But Will Hill called them a tortured fan base, and that's very accurate. This is a team, an organization that has been desperate for a franchise-type quarterback that could get them to that next level. I mean, you look at the names that they've had to go through, haven't made the playoffs in more than a decade. This was the year they really felt that they were going to have everything come together and went all in to be able to secure Aaron Rodgers. Now, you mentioned the Zach Wilson of it all. Robert Saleh did say yesterday in his post-game press conference that their current plan is to move forward with Zach Wilson. But for anybody who did miss some of that conversation in our opening hour, Michael, do you think that the Jets will go out there and grab a veteran quarterback and grab somebody else, a Carson Wentz, a you'll love this one. Colin Kaepernick had his agent reach out. He's available. So, but some of the names that are out there, is it worth pursuing anybody?
Did Colin Kaepernick play his last year in the league? Did anybody watch him play?
Michael, do you remember when his last year in the league was? 2016.
Well, it was 2016. I was at his last game. He played down in Los Angeles. And, you know, they came back to beat the Rams that day. Do you remember that game?
Unfortunately, yes.
I mean, and that was Chip Kelly's, what, last year there,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, the Colin Kaepernick saga dates back to a very, very long time. And year after year, he's talking about how in shape he is and how he's ready to go. But let's move on from that. Realistically,
yeah,
though,
please.
Michael, are there any of those veteran QBs or young guys that could step in?
Well, you know, this will come from Nathaniel Hackett because Saleh's not going to go in there and say, hey, we should sign this guy. It's going to come from somebody that Nathaniel Hackett's had contact with. Would Blake Bortles come out of retirement? He's coached Blake Bortles before, right? Blake Bortles isn't that old of a player. Now, I know he retired, but Nathaniel Hackett had Blake Bortles almost to the conference championship game in New England. He was a seven-cut underthrow from getting there. So would they bring Blake Bortles back? I think a lot of this comes from the coordinator, somebody who knows his offense, who's comfortable within his offense, who knows it quickly. Could Carson Wentz? I don't know. But you want Carson Wentz in the same room with Zach Wilson? I don't think so. Not that Carson Wentz is a bad guy. He's a different guy, okay? I think it's a lot of that. And if you're going to prop up Wilson, you got to get the right supporting cast. Like, let's play this out, Stormy. Say they call Phillip Rivers, the high school coach down in Alabama. Phillip would get killed behind this line. He couldn't get out of his own way. I mean, that would be an injustice. That would be like somebody coming to your wedding and saying, I object, right? There's no way you could let this happen. So forget Phillip Rivers. You know, forget
Matt Ryan,
the Tom
same
Brady.
Thing. I would say Matt Ryan, same
the
thing.
Matt Ryan, same thing. Forget Matt. Like, anybody you put in here has got to have some movement. I mean, Wentz makes sense in the sense that he can at least get out of his own way. He's a turnover machine. But, you know, you have to get somebody because I think behind this offensive line, the way it's set up, they haven't seen their last quarterback injury.
They
haven't.
Yeah, so you need to get some depth regardless. If you do decide you're going to go with Zach Wilson, you got to bring somebody else in that room behind him. But I think the preference would be, if you're trying to win football games, to go out and give you somebody who could give you a better chance than Zach Wilson does. Another name I saw thrown around was maybe a Jameis Winston. I've heard Colt McCoy, somebody that could be brought in.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, you bring Colt in. Behind this line, Colt can't stay healthy. You watch Colt this summer. I mean, the great guy, going to be probably our state senator from the state of Texas, no doubt. No way, right? How do you bring him in? Jameis Winston's a turnover machine. He's never played in this offense before. And why would you think that New Orleans is just going to let him walk out? He had a chance to be a free agent this year, and he chose to sign to be a backup in New Orleans. I'm sure the Jets are going to make some phone calls, but you know, I don't see that.
I don't think the Ravens would give up Tyler Huntley either. That was the first name that came to my mind because you need somebody that can run.
Right. I think they'll call Blake Bortles.
Yeah. Okay. We'll keep that in the back pocket. Blake Bortles, keep that name in mind. The Jets now, you mentioned the Cowboys, they got to turn their attention now to Dallas, where they go from being a 3-point underdog to now an 8.5-point dog, total 42. The Bills, meanwhile, who really struggled, 4 turnovers for their quarterback, Josh Allen, they go from a 9.5-point favorite hosting the Raiders next week to 8.5, total 47.5. Any early thoughts there?
You know, I was surprised it's 8.5. I was surprised it was 9.5 with the Raiders, considering the Raiders have played well. I'm surprised the number's moving towards the Raiders because when you look at it, the Raiders, you know, have played pretty well. I mean, they didn't play perfectly, but they played pretty well. And Garoppolo gives them some life. Now, they're training in West Virginia, so they're staying on the East Coast time. They're there now. They're going to fly up there. Everybody just assumes Buffalo's going to walk in the park and beat them. I think 8.5 is pretty heavy. I'm not surprised it's coming down. I think it'll close at 7, 7.5.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are probably going to just presume that's a bounce back spot for Buffalo. I could see that being a very, very popular contest play for Survivor, given the options that there are available for week 2. But we'll keep an eye on that line, certainly. Another thing we need to keep an eye on are some of these injuries for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Michael. Of course, we know Steelers got rocked opening weekend against the 49ers, 30-7, that final, and goes from bad to worse. Defensive tackle Cam Hayward gets injured in the game. It's a groin. He's reportedly going to undergo surgery, will miss up to 8 weeks. And this is a guy who's had back-to-back 10 sack seasons, super important to the core of that defense.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a hard one. Johnson, Hayward, they got a bunch of injuries
Johnson
there.
Yeah, Johnson sidelined for a few weeks.
Yeah, they can't afford. I mean, this hurts them. I mean, and Hayward's their glue defensively. Now, Cincinnati's not prone to run the football, but I think Hayward really, I mean, this one hurts them. And they've got other injuries on their team. Freiermuth is hurt as well. Whether he can come back and play. This will be a true challenge for Pittsburgh to get a Cleveland team who did lose their starting right tackle. But, you know, Cleveland's got some depth in the offensive line. There's no question about that. And they're able to offset that. And they've got, you know, the way they ran the football, Nick Chubb proved to me on Sunday he's the best back in the league. You know, maybe Josh Jacobs when he gets back. But I felt like DeJuan Jones, the kid they picked in the 4th round, fit right in at right tackle. He played well. And they've got good skill players. This will be a tough game for Pittsburgh, especially wounded. Now, I don't count Pittsburgh out. I really don't, because Pittsburgh has the Browns numbers. Yeah. It's really hard for the Browns to go down there and win. But to me, this is a team that is on the rise, Cleveland. They're playing well. They played well. And I think they're going to keep playing well offensively and defensively. The thing for the Steelers, too, they cannot get into a 40-pass game like they did against San Francisco. They just can't. That's not Pickett. Like, Pickett's not going to carry the team. Pickett can run the team. There's a difference, right? Mahomes can carry a team. You know, what we're seeing with Josh Allen lately is he can run the team, but he's trying to carry it, right? That Burrow can run the team. He can't really carry it, especially when he doesn't have enough time to it. But to me, that's what you have to do. You got to find a guy that'll run the team. And I think that ultimately, if Pickett doesn't have a running game with him, it really puts the burden on him and it makes it very challenging.
It does. And I do think, though, especially based on this line, despite the Steelers missing Deontay Johnson on offense, that people expect that offense to get figured out a little bit better here in the spot, because the line is only 2. Browns are a 2-point favorite there in Pittsburgh, total 40.5. And I know that it's obviously a tough place to play, but the 49ers still did that damage out there in Pittsburgh. But you look at that number and you just get the feeling that people expect a much better performance from that Mike Tomlin group, and that he'll have them motivated in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, look, don't count them out. They love the backs against the wall mentality. They love it, and they're good at it. Look, this is what they're built for. They're built for toughness. And if you're the Browns, you're going to go down there. You're getting their best punch, and you better make sure that you stop that run. You stop Harris. You stop Warren, because if you don't, it's going to be a problem.
No question. Again, total in the game, 40.5. And Mike Tomlin, just some closing comments on Cam Hayward's injury, said losing him is significant. Replacing Cam is not a one-man job. It's a multiple-man's job and a coach's job. So putting a lot of that on his shoulders as well as they get set to face Cleveland, a tough task, as they had a really, really solid opening weekend against Joe Burrow and the Bengals. We're going to step aside here on the Lombardi line, but Michael, when we come back, it's time for a storm warning. We got some contenders that, wait, could they be pretenders? We're going to take a look when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this football season your best ever by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Get full access to everything we do, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up for a VSiN annual subscription, and you'll also get a free copy of our own Michael Lombardi's new book, Football Done Right. All you got to do is use the promo code Lombardi when you sign up. And if you would like an autographed copy of Michael's book, just email us. Subscribe@VSiN.com is the account. This is a limited time offer, so sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Great stuff as always, as we welcome you back into the Lombardi line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and DraftKings Network. It is time, Michael, for what producer Steph and I are calling a storm warning. There are some teams in the NFL and college football that are supposed to be contenders, supposed to be teams that could really make a push this year and potentially find themselves in a spot for a Super Bowl, that I have some questions about. And I'm curious to see if you agree that these teams could already, and again, limited sample size, it's only week one, week two in the books for the NFL and college football. But if you agree that maybe some of these contenders could be at risk, we're going to start. Jets and Bills are too obvious after Monday Night Football, so we're just going to move ahead. How about the Chargers? Because that defense, I know that you tried to call Brandon Staley my guy earlier, and we're just going to move on past that because he is not my guy. That defense was struggling against Miami right out the gate, despite having all their stars on the field, despite adding Eric Hendricks. Paper thin, allowed historic performances to Tua Tagovailoa and Tyreek Hill. I'm putting the storm warning out. I think this is a contender that's looking like a pretender early.
I think they're a pretender too. I thought they always were a pretender. I mean, the last six quarters of defense, they forced one punt. I mean, you know, and against Jacksonville, against Miami. I mean, you watch the game and you're wondering, like, what are they doing? What are they doing?
Yet somehow, Michael, their odds got shorter. Like, you look in the AFC West from +290 to +240 to win the AFC, down from 12-1 to 11-1.
They're darlings of the analytical community. They really are. And I bet you people bet them. I bet everybody's going to load up. What's the line on Tennessee right now? Hold on. I mean, what's the line on that game right now? Tennessee, They're a 3-point favorite in Tennessee. You think that moves to 3.5? I mean, I doubt they want to move it to 3. It's three plus minus 115. So it wants to get to 3.5. They just want you to pay a price for it, right?
Yep. 3 is that key number.
Some shops, it's 3-118. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably going to move in that direction as the week goes on because so many people have belief in the offense. But the defense is where I see significant issues here. We talked earlier in the program about J.C. Jackson struggled to keep pace, had that inexcusable P.I. penalty in the final seconds of the first half, which led to Miami having to go ahead field goal in that position. The pass rush did not look any better. Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, where are you at? No pressure on Tua. It was just...
Nobody talks about that end of the half one, Stormy. That one was the all-timer. Like, how are you going to give them 3 points on that? There's no way they should get 3 points on that. There's no way they should get 3 points, and yet they did.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. The Chargers kick a field goal with 14 seconds to tie the game at the half, 17-17, okay? 14 seconds there was on that clock. They kicked the field goal. And my team, your team, my man, Brendan Staley, who I'm reminded on Twitter is the greatest coach since George Halas, Vince Lombardi, you know, Paul Brown, everybody I wrote about in my book, he's better. Now, they get the ball with 9 seconds. Miami gets the ball with 9 seconds on their own 25, okay? And they run a play-action pass. Al Davis would say, who are you fooling running a play-action pass on that down, right? Mm-hmm. They actually fake the handoff, and they complete a pass. And now they basically got the ball to what? The 45-yard line? Okay? They got the ball. There's 2 seconds left to go in the game. 2 seconds left to go. The ball's at the 47. And they rush four guys, and two guys stand there at the end of the line. And J.C. Jackson just mugs the receiver. Yep. And everybody threw a flag. Everybody threw a flag. That's a fireball. That's malpractice right there.
That's why I said inexcusable. Inexcusable. Okay, I've got another storm warning out.
Go ahead.
For the Cincinnati Bengals. And I know, we don't want to overreact to week one. Last year, the Bengals started slow. The year before, they started slow. Last year, Joe Burrow throws 3 interceptions. But 82 yards, Michael, to only put up 3 points as an offense in this spot, I know that I don't want to take too much out of week one, but I still think with as competitive as the AFC is going to be this year, that you can't afford a slow start that's going to last very long. And I think the Bengals might be in for that given the lack of production that we were able to get out of Joe Burrow in the preseason due to that calf.
I think they missed Perrine too, Stormy. I don't disagree with you on this one. I think they missed Sammy Perrine in his nickel role, right? And I think their offense, they're in 11 all the time. There's no versatility to it, and they have no versatility within their offense. It's one thing to be an 11 team all the time. It's another thing to have, you know, a different look out of 11 and be able to run the ball. They ran the ball effectively early in the game. They got away from it. I'm a little bit with you. I'm not sure that they're going to be able to overcome. Now, look, I think Burrow's great. You know, the weather was a factor. I'm kind of stepping back because of the weather. The weather was a huge factor.
Yeah, it was misty. Joe Burrow couldn't really do anything mobility-wise. He put the gloves on. They have, in the AFC North, gone from plus 140 to plus 245. In the AFC, those odds extended plus 550 to plus 750. And the Super Bowl odds as well, from 11-1 now to 14-1. How about the Seattle Seahawks? Because... this is, obviously I told you they were my favorite bet last week. I had a lot of confidence in them coming in. Although you're right, you know, division games are tricky. The Sean McVay, Matt Stafford of it all. But for Geno Smith to only lead that offense to 12 yards in the second half is remarkably bad. And how many people this offseason did we hear say, wow, Seattle could really close the gap on San Francisco in the NFC West? It looked like David and Goliath between the 49ers and Seattle this weekend.
Well, when you lose your 2 starting tackles in the game, that's not easy, right? That's a hard thing to overcome. And then you also, as we talked about on the show, we have Raheem Morris kind of knows Shane Waldron. I mean, he kind of has some failed. He played him well last year without Aaron Donald, you know, in a game where the Rams had nothing to play for and Seattle had everything to play for. So I'm going to say let's not talk. I'm dismissing that game. Seattle's injuries are more concerning for me than – the way they played against the Rams. Geno's got to play better. He needs his tackles. They're going to sign Jason Peters today. Can you imagine this? They're going to bring back Jason Peters at 41 years old. That's how desperate they are to get a tackle in there. Oof. So this doesn't bode well when you're going against Hutchinson and the boys up in Detroit in the dome with crowd noise. That's always going to be an issue. But they could, they're still talented offensively. They got to get that line fixed, and they got to play better defensively.
5.5.
And that's going to be really the key.
Yeah, 5.5, 6-point dog against the Lions coming up. We've seen their odds elongate in every category significantly since the loss, though, in week one, from plus 230 to plus 650 in the NFC West, 14-1 to 28-1 in the NFC. Let's go to college football here, Michael, because there are, you know, similar to what I mentioned off the top with the NFL and the Bills and Jets, there are some obvious ones that have lost. There's LSU, Alabama, Clemson. But I'm actually going to go to a team that's 2-0 so far this season in Ohio State, because Michigan and Penn State, they both really appear to be on target. But from what I've seen from the Buckeyes, they seem off, more like they're trying to find their footing than a Big Ten winner, national championship contender. What do you think about what you've seen from this crew so far through two games?
I'm a little concerned with you. You know, I want to see how it all going to play against better competition. I'm intrigued by Penn State. Now, look, I know they played Delaware last week. I get that. But to me, Drew Aller's really good, and Penn State's really good. And look, we all have our questions whether they're going to be coached really good. That's going to be an issue. But I do. I'm not sold that Ohio State's there yet. I think we need more, to quote Femi, we need more information. We need more film.
Yeah,
we need a little bit more look.
And for people who are just, you know, scoreboard watching and you think 2-0, a pair of 20-plus wins for Ohio State, I probably think I'm crazy. But you look at game one versus Indiana, that score was not indicative of how much they struggled.
Yeah, they
exactly.
Struggled.
Kyle McCord was under pressure. He was out of sync on most of those throws. We didn't see anything from Marvin Harrison Jr., just 18 yards. And then, yes, the offense did wake up in game two, but that was against Youngstown State in a game that they were, 45-point favorites. They only win 35-7. Their offensive line was inconsistent. Their penalties were crazy. Like, that's probably the biggest concern for me moving forward for them to have success in the Big Ten and to contend for a national championship, is the offensive line and penalty issues got to be cleaned up. They have one more tune-up this week against Western Kentucky before they have that nationally televised primetime game against Notre Dame. So, I'm not sure what we're going to get in that one. And I like Notre Dame where things sit right now.
I like Sam for the Heisman.
Sam Hartman, Sammy H.
Let's go. Yep.
We're going to step aside here on the Lombardi line, but we'll keep the college football talk rolling when we return. Aaron Moore, VSiN's own, is going to join us here in just a little bit. Does he think Texas is back? That Alabama win, certainly a statement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football is back in full swing with another week of epic games ahead. And who's got you covered on the action for every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet $5 on football and you get $200 back instantly in bonus bets. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use the code VEGAS to sign up. New customers, again, just bet $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code VEGAS, V-E-G-A-S. The crown is yours. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We welcome you back to the Lombardi Line on DraftKings Network and VSiN, the sports betting network. We now continue some of our college football talk with VSiN.com writer Aaron Moore, who joins us now, the professor himself, at Pub Relation Prof on X. And let's get started. The obvious question after last week, is Texas back? A remarkable win there for Texas in Tuscaloosa. Quinn Ewers, the first quarterback to do that since Joe Burrow. Are they really back?
Stormy, I think they're back in the sense that now if they beat Alabama, they're in the conversation. I don't think you can say they're back all the way. We still have 8-9 weeks to go. But they are certainly a focal point, and what they did to Alabama makes them legitimate. So I don't want to say, is Texas back? But Texas is legitimate. Now moving forward, they're in that conversation. You have to mention them with Ohio State and Michigan, and obviously with Georgia. So they're in the conversation rightfully. Back? I think we got to wait till about 5 or 6 more weeks before we say that.
Are you going to put Notre Dame in? Now, look, I'm not a Notre Dame or homer. I got to be honest. I mean, Barbershop Mike, my dad, every time he goes to church, he puts $2. He thinks he's giving it to the Catholic. He thinks he's giving it to the football program. So I'm not that guy. But do you think Notre Dame is back?
Do I think
in the conversation?
Yeah, in the conversation, I do. And I think Sam Hartman really has made them a legitimate team. But as you're saying, Michael, there's always going to be this overinflation of Notre Dame. And we've seen that for many, many decades. They're always going to be focused in the media. There's always going to be talk about Notre Dame. And I think they get inflated a little bit. And then we've seen if they get to the playoffs, if they get against these SEC teams, they're certainly not there. So I don't think they're a national championship team, but are they close to a playoff team right now with four teams? Absolutely. And then moving forward, as the playoffs expand, I think you're going to see Notre Dame as a playoff team moving forward continually.
22-1 in the national championship odds. And real quickly, just to go back to Texas briefly, we saw them after this past weekend rise six spots in the national rankings. They are the odds-on favorite now to win the Big 12 and third, tied for third with Florida State on the odds board to win a national title themselves, 10-1 behind only Georgia and Michigan. Being in the conversation is great, but are the people that are making those wagers on Texas, do you think that they're in a good position for this team to find themselves in a college football playoff and potentially a national championship down the line this year?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Stormy, after that Alabama game, we now have to look at their schedule. And it's not just the idea of Texas doing well. It's can they do well? And you look at their schedule, and it's a very manageable schedule. At Baylor, should be able to do well with that. The Oklahoma game, that's obviously always the shootout. Can go either way, but Texas certainly looks to be the better team of those two. And then you have a Kansas State team, and I think it's interesting. We're talking about Texas. We're talking about their last year in the Big 12. But once again, Kansas State is overlooked. So that game on November 4th against Kansas State, that really is going to be a major game for the Texas season. And then maybe in November 4th, we can talk about if Texas is back after that K-State game.
I also do want to jump in real quickly on one more thing there, because they face Wyoming this weekend. And what's the spread here? 29.5. Do you think this could be that both let down and look ahead a little bit potentially against Wyoming? Like, would there be a good number to buy in on to take the plus points in this spot, knowing that, hey, you're just coming off this massive win over Alabama and you have a rival in Baylor coming up?
I would want to say that, other than if we're talking about Texas being in the conversation, and I think the 14 playoff and all the media coverage and everything we're talking about, it's almost like we're going back to the future, so to speak. The major teams have to make statement wins. They have to win big. They have to put on these really explosive performances to get that media traction, to get that attention. So looking at that game, Texas needs to win by more than 30 points, because that's going to give them that conversation, just like you started off, Stormy, yeah. Is Texas back? If they don't win by 30 points, then we're going to say, oh, well, there's a letdown from the Alabama game. Texas isn't back yet.
You know, the Demon Deacons of James Madison, big win. They beat Virginia. And now you got their two-point dogs to Troy. And you're going to go with Troy?
I'm taking Troy in this game because, Michael, last year JMU was one of the big stories. And you look in the Sun Belt here, Troy, always that good defensive team. And James Madison, after that massive win against Virginia, this is not Virginia from 20-some years ago where they were the number one team, but still for James Madison, this is a fantastic win. These two teams did not play last year. Now you're going to play Troy after that win for James Madison. So I do like Troy in this case, giving the 2 and 2.5.
How about, I see you also have a play on this San Jose State-Toledo game. It's been kind of a slow start for both of these squads. What are you interested in here?
So you look at it, Toledo can score. I think that's one of the main things we want to see with that Toledo team. And if we're looking at them from scoring standpoint, they came off a very easy game against Texas Southern. So I like them going against San Jose State in this situation, the 8 points. And 8 points is one of those numbers we fear. But I do like Toledo to get this at least a double-digit victory.
Okay, so I'm told reliably that they have the money to buy out the great Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M after that game. And look, we all know down there they have the money to do it. It'd be expensive, but it sounds like they're going to do it. You know, and the way they did move the football, they moved the football better with Petrino, but now they can't play defense. So they get Louisiana Monroe in, and you think both teams will hit the over at 53?
So the 53 there, Michael, what you have to look at in these lopsided games, Texas A&M can get a 40-plus. They can score 40-plus points. Not concerned about that. We saw what they can do on offense last week. And then you look at the other team. What I like to say is, how much can they contribute? In Louisiana, Monroe, certainly not a strong team, but they can get that 10, 11, 13 points. That's what I'm looking at for Louisiana, Monroe to make their contribution here for that over. Because as you said, Michael, the Texas A&M offense, there's a lot of problems in College Station. The offense isn't one of them.
Let's turn our attention from the SEC to the Pac-12, because boy, is this conference trying to go out with a bang here with some of the talent they have, especially at the quarterback position at the top half of this league. Is there a spot, like, obviously Caleb Williams has been tremendous here to start with USC, but they're about to get to some of those tougher, more competitive games. Colorado will be here soon, which will be interesting. Oregon, Washington down the line. Is this conference theirs to lose, or who do you think is going to give them the best run in the Pac-12?
So is it it's their conference after what they did last year. They have the returning Heisman Trophy winner. I think if we look at the Pac-12 as what we know it now, you've got one of the few conferences in all the country, five, six, maybe even seven teams, go all the way down to UCLA, Washington State. They can contend with it. So USC is there because of last year. USC is what Caleb Williams has gotten them to this level. But now this is five, six, seven team deep conference. It's amazing. So we can look at the depth of it. But then from there, all of a sudden it goes away. So we're looking at this. It's like a beautiful flower that's about to break up as the wind gets to it. And what a conference it is this year. So by no means is the 190 to plus 190 for USC to win it. I think you got to go a little bit deeper. And if you start looking at it, look at Oregon State, 12-1. Yeah. That is a great number right there in a conference with all these contenders. You got to believe certain teams are going to beat each other up. So if you look at the Pac-12, I think you want to look at that futures board more in the middle to see where those teams are and hope there's a lot of carnage along the way.
Yeah, I mean, look, Washington State, everybody thought that Wisconsin was just going to go in there and give them a whooping, and Cameron Ward's really good. Mississippi State had to go to overtime to beat Arizona, and Arizona had every opportunity to win the game in overtime, and they just couldn't convert it, and they were going to go for two anyway. So I'm with you. I think this Pac-12 is deeper than people think it is because of the quarterback play.
And, Michael, you might be able to say right now it's the deepest conference in college football. Doesn't mean the national champion is coming out of there, but to look at it for a 12-week season or so, this is probably the deepest conference in college football.
Aaron, awesome stuff. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Aaron. Yep. And Stormy, we didn't talk about how great Colorado is and how good their offense looked, and they got Colorado State, which seems like a trap. We'll get them going to Oregon in 2 weeks, but I think Colorado knows this is a trap game. Yeah. I think they'll play well.
You look down, we talk about the quarterbacks, but truly, Caleb Williams, USC, Michael Penix Jr., Washington, Bo Nix, Oregon, Cam Rising when healthy at Utah, DJ Uiagalelei at Oregon State, Shedeur Sanders at Colorado, who's proven to be phenomenal. You just talked about Washington State.
Delora.
Yeah, just keep on going down the line with what the Pac-12 has to offer. And yet, you know, let's just disband. Let's just go everywhere else. I hate everything. We're going to take a break here on the Lombardi Line. We are wrapping things up when we return. Thanks for joining us. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back to the NFL next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN is here to make you a more informed, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. And that's exactly what we are going to do here as we round out today's Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. But I wanted to look at some of these splits, Michael, and there are a number of very lopsided games here already early in the week as we get set for game two, starting with a couple of teams that are looking to bounce back from opening week losses. The Kansas City Chiefs, a 3-point favorite at the Jags this week, 92% of the early handle and 79% of bets are on Kansas City to get back in and cover the spread.
Well, I think it's hard to, you know, look, Andy Reid coming off a bye, good. So he's got 10 days to prepare. The other thing I think it helps Andy Reid in this case, if he knows he's not going to have Kelce, like he didn't know he wasn't going to have Kelce until 24 hours, 48 hours before the game. It's hard to rearrange things and change your offense that quickly and kind of get the rhythm and the sense of it all. So, but I don't know how Kelce could play. I really don't. I mean, they talked about he could come back, but, you know, when you go through it, he had swelling. You know, it's a challenge to do all those things. If he doesn't play, you know, they're going to rely on these receivers, and I'm sure they're going to play better than they did. But they didn't look very fast, and I think Jacksonville is going to give them some trouble offensively. Jacksonville's offense is really good. They got into rhythm in that fourth quarter. Really, they took the game over. Ridley was sensational. You know, we know ATN is really good. They mix up Bixby and ATN to keep him fresh for the fourth quarter and, you know, to go along with Kirk and Zay Jones. So this is a good team. Now, they got to make sure they're good up front too, because Brandon Scherff, he missed the game and came back in, or maybe didn't come back in. So the injury report to me is going to determine a lot of this game, whether I think it's a game worthwhile to consider or one you just move off to the side.
Yeah, and we'll get some of the early injury report information tomorrow afternoon, so hopefully we can get ahead of some of that stuff. But to your point about the Jags, like Calvin Ridley, how fun was it to see him back on the field feeling himself, 100-yard day? I did want to see, you mentioned Tank Bigsby, I wanted to see a little bit more out of him. Didn't really do much in support of our guy ETN in the run game, but Travis Etienne, 77 yards. I really like the potential for that offense to keep clicking here for the year two of Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence combo. But yeah, again, 92% of the handle back in Kansas City to get back in the win column and cover that three. Also, we see 93% of handle, 74% of bets back in the New York Football Giants as a 4.5-point favorite in Arizona taking on the Cardinals, despite getting lit up 40-0 against Dallas on Sunday Night Football. What do you think of that number?
Well, I think this number is a reflection of a couple things. Nobody respects Arizona. Okay, that's fair. Everybody thinks the Giants will bounce back. That's fair. And everybody believes the Giants beat up on bad teams. That's fair as well. So, you know, I think that's why everybody wants to play this. Everybody sees it. And I think the Giants have to really kind of have a meeting with themselves. One thing we learn about week one is sometimes the opponent is yourself. New England could say that easily. You watch that New England tape, and, you know, the Eagles won the game. New England had very many chances to win the game, but they couldn't make the play. Not because Philly stopped it. New England stopped themselves. It's the same thing with the Giants. They stopped themselves because they tried to play outside their element. You know, they try to do things they're not good at doing. They have to go back to being who they were last year. So, and that's usually playing in tight games. I mean, remember, this Giant team is not overly talented. I know they've had this publicity, but they're a draft away from being good enough. And if Evan Neal doesn't play better at right tackle, they'll be going through quarterbacks too.
And it's still shocking to me that Daniel Jones has the contract that he does, but neither here nor there. A team, though, that did win opening weekend, but it's not getting a whole lot of respect, is the Los Angeles Rams, because they have to deal with the San Francisco 49ers. San Francisco coming off a dominant win of their own, 30-7 over the Pittsburgh Steelers to open the season. Despite a lot of people thinking that game might be close, it was not. San Francisco is an 8-point favorite in this game in LA. We know we're going to see a whole lot of red in the stadium.
There's going to be so much. It's a 49er home game, let's be clear. And I think the number reflects that, right?
Yeah,
I think the number reflects it, too. So, look, the one thing we do know, too, is we know the 49ers play the Rams really well. They play them really well. And Stafford didn't get a lot of pressure last week. He was able to throw the ball comfortably. That's not going to be the case this week. He's going to have to make some tight throws, and that offensive line will be challenged. I think McVay did one of the best coaching jobs of the year last week in terms of getting his team ready, having them adjusted out, because to hold Seattle to one first down in the second half and basically have 10, 12 plays is somewhat remarkable, considering the fact that, you know, that they don't have, other than Aaron Donald, you can't name a starter on defense. So this will be a little bit of a difference because the Rams are not an overly physical team, and the 49ers are.
Yeah. 81% of the handle, 69% of the bets on San Francisco. And you talk about the head-to-head. The Rams are 1-8, their last nine straight up against the San Francisco 49ers, the lone win in that NFC Championship game that sent them to the Super Bowl that they eventually won. Let's go to the Browns and Steelers. 74% of the handle, 77% of bets. Believers that Cleveland is going to cover that two-point spread.
Yeah, it's funny. The line opened up the Steelers, and then it flipped, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it flipped. I really don't, because, look, week one was bad, and now the injury factor is why it probably flipped, because Pittsburgh obviously is hurt. So I think the line may be right. I see this by Sunday coming down to a pick 'em, because I know Pittsburgh's hurt, but it's still, they have a way of playing Cleveland. They know how to play them, and I don't want to bet against Mike Tomlin with his backs to the wall. Mm. I really don't want to bet them in that case. And I really think, to me, when you look at this, I just think it's hard for Cleveland to go in there and win. This is going to tell us a lot about Cleveland, their mental toughness and their physical toughness in this game, because this is the one you really want. This is the one you want to measure your team on. I think it's one of the things you liked about what the Raiders did. You measure your team by winning on the road, and how do you handle adversity? Down 6 points in the fourth quarter, hold them to get a three and out, get the ball back, don't get them back. That shows you've got mental toughness as a team. I think this will be a great game for Cleveland to show us that.
Yeah, and that Cleveland defense certainly looked legit in their opener against Cincinnati, but we'll see if they can continue that against the Steelers, who are certainly motivated to get back on track offensively. And Mike Tomlin, to your point, a master motivator. We've just got a couple minutes left here, Michael, and so I want to make sure we get to our pro tip of the show. We do these every single show here at VSiN, every day on the Lombardi Line. But today we were talking about, as you're looking ahead to these week two spreads and betting options for the NFL, just don't assume a team can't go 0-2. Yeah. And this thought process came up when we were talking about the Bills and how they performed here on week one, and everybody wanting to back them, you're sure, this week.
Right, because, you know, everybody just, oh, they're going to bounce back. You know, everybody just assumes a good team will bounce back. Well, sometimes it takes three games. Sometimes it takes a little bit more than that. You know, Denver's going to bounce back against Washington. Washington barely beat Arizona. Denver lost. They're going to bounce back. They've got Sean Payton. Well, they're going to have to play good. That's going to be a better defense Washington has than the Raiders had. And if they throw in checkdowns like they did against the Raiders and they don't have Jerry Jeudy, I would caution you to be careful there. Everybody's jumping all over Denver now, but are they really going to be good enough to defeat this Washington defense, which is good? You know, so I think you have to be really careful about that. The Chargers, that we love the Chargers, they're going to bounce back this week against a bad Tennessee team. Well, Tennessee's not bad. Ryan Tannehill played poorly. They couldn't move the ball in the red area. A lot of our problems in betting comes down to really understanding why a team won and why a team lost. And if you don't really dig into the game last week to understand what happened, it's not going to help your handicap in this week.
And I think that's too, Michael, what can be so tricky about week one is because we don't want to overreact to things. So we think, oh, hey, this team really can't be as bad as they showed. They're definitely going to bounce back this week. But, yeah, you know, you have to temper that thought process a little bit, too. It's definitely a feeling out here in these early couple of weeks of the year. Great stuff, as always, Michael. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you, Stormy. We'll talk tomorrow. Hopefully no injuries will happen between now and then.
I know. We shall see. Hopefully not my injury either, you know? Like,
yeah,
don't need that meniscus
healthy
to flare up.
Yeah. don't move that ankle too much like our man did last night. Don't do that.
I told you I'm getting up there. I hope I'm not contemplating retirement after all this. Great.
Well, they used to call the Achilles the old man injury, you know? 33 is not old, though, for Marino. Nor is 30.
not ideal. We got Aaron Rodgers with the Achilles tear, his season over. J.K. Dobbins with the Achilles tail, his season over. That's a wrap for today's edition of the Lombardi Line. Come join us tomorrow, same time, same place. Thanks to our producer, Stephanie Kamerschack, and everybody behind the scenes. Keep it locked right here on VSiN.